Welcome to a new episode of Liftoff, a Jets football podcast with your hosts, Chris, and from playlikeajet.com, Mr. Sharman Phillip. And remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Liftoff Jets. You could follow Sharman at GrownFolk1980. You could follow myself at CP7NY. You could also find our podcast wherever you find your podcasts, at Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, iHeartRadio. And you could also find us at SportsWire Radio, which is at sportsanarium.com/player. And you can follow the station manager there, Thomas Bryce, at ThomasBryce2017, for all the scheduling. So, Sharman, we got our special guest, but he's not really a guest anymore. I think he's more of a co-host as well.
No.
So,
yeah.
Introduce.
At this point. Andrew Golden, as always, man. You know, anybody that listens to us, they know he comes through. We love having him. It's entertaining and informative at the same time. It's pretty hard to like pull that off, but the man does it. Yes. Welcome again, man. Andrew, how's it going?
Yeah, no, it's going great, guys. I appreciate the intro as always. You know, I go for the brand of the Billy Mays of draft scouting. I feel like I'm hitting that pretty well. So appreciate you guys with the intro there. We got a handful of good draft picks to talk about. We got a schedule that just released. We got Aaron Rodgers in New York. I mean, I'm pretty sure the last time we talked, that was speculation. That wasn't even official yet.
Yes,
we were waiting to see what was going to happen. We now know for a fact that he is there. He is in New York. He is in the facility. He is throwing in practice to Garrett Wilson, and we are all drooling and losing our minds, and it is a great time to be a Jets fan.
Yes, finally.
It is. Yeah, it is the greatest time to be a Jet fan. And the weirdest thing is people's conversation surrounded in the Jets is positive and makes me feel like I don't deserve it. It's kind
we do. No, we've been through it. We've sat through and with every, listen, we watched Adam Gase for 2 years. We earned this.
Oh yeah.
That, well, you know what? You're right.
Sat through a lot worse
right.
too. Right?
Yeah.
We definitely deserve it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We've deserved it, man. But the 2023 draft, there's no way it would have matched what happened the year before. I think before we even start talking about the draft, we should kind of like talk about the acquisition of Aaron Rodgers, because it did impact the positioning of the draft. Andrew, what do you think about the process? Because I will tell you straight up front, I thought that it was a little lax. I did not like the fact that we had to drop a couple spots to 15 from 13. And I do not like the fact that we were giving up what would probably be a first-round pick next year. Tell me your feelings about the acquisition and the process.
Yeah, it is a really, really interesting process where everyone knew from the outside looking in, including, you know, us, we were talking before it all happened, this was going to happen eventually. And it seemed like the Jets were, if Aaron Rodgers was going to be traded by the Packers, that was the only place that was going to make sense for him to go. And then we found out that that's where he wanted to go as well. It seemed like it made a lot of sense for that trade to kind of facilitate itself. And as we saw it, the process dragged on, negotiations got ugly. I read a handful of articles from, I believe, Connor Hughes and Albert Breer both put individual articles up on the same topic on the same day, funny enough, over the Jets pursuing Aaron Rodgers and how this trade really came to be. And it started a handful of months ago with the combine, and the Jets kind of got together and decided at the end of the season that their roster is ready to go and the quarterback is the one spot they're lacking, and they wanted to make a move to secure that position while their roster outside of that court position is still young and effective. And as the process goes on, they zero in on Rodgers. They did a list of apparently 19 different quarterbacks that they had all ranked and tiered and how good they would make them right away. And Rodgers was in their group of top three with Lamar Jackson and Matt Stafford as the two other options. Rodgers was at the top of their list from everything we can tell. He was their number one choice from the get-go. And it took a while, but it happened. And I think when you're looking at the compensation, I think the draft was obviously a bit of a deadline, for lack of a better word, that kind of sped things up and got these guys closer on their same sides. Honestly, I would have preferred them to keep 13 and not move down the two spots, but I'm going to be honest, Sharman, I'm not so sure that they would have taken to Broderick Jones at 13. And I know it seems like that's the thought and the consensus out there, and the Patriots, you know, let the Steelers come up and steal Broderick Jones. I'm sure they were interested. Clearly, they had a thought at tackle. They drafted a tackle later in the draft and Carter Warren. It's not like this wasn't a position that wasn't a need. But I think now, with hindsight, looking at everything and how this team is viewing it, I think the tackle need was maybe a bit more inflated by fans than the Jets themselves might have actually felt. We're all terrified Mekhi Becton's going to get hurt, or Dwayne Brown's going to be old, or we're not going to be able to keep up this depth because we saw the injuries from last year. But if you're looking at it from an optimistic standpoint, and if you're the Jets and you're hoping for the best and you're grading your board and you're valuing your players and you're assessing who's going to help us this next year win as much as possible, there's no guarantee you take a tackle at 13, that guy even starts. What if Becton's fine? What if he's healthy and playing well? What if Dwayne Brown is the same way? What if they have Max Mitchell come back, even if Dwayne Brown isn't there, and Becton takes the left tackle spot, and then they have a spot at right tackle? There was no outright guarantee that any offensive lineman they picked, really outside of maybe a center, that was taken in the first round at 13th overall was going to be a starter. And what everybody in the world that's a Jets fan that knows this team has said for months and months leading up to the draft, go and get instant impact players. You're selling out for 2023. You're mortgaging the future. You're giving up this first round pick for a 39-year-old quarterback a year after he's supposed to be playing. This is your year to go out and go for it. Find guys that are going to make an impact right now. We're not necessarily trying to round out the depth. And then everybody also said, take a tackle in the first round. And so it was kind of like this
didn't make a sense.
Competing narrative, right? Where you can't really have, unless you know for a fact that rookie tackle is going to start, and in Jets fans' eyes, yeah, that's great. Let's get rid of Dwayne Brown. Let's start the process. Let's get a guy in there. Then you have a potential rookie left tackle blocking for Aaron Rodgers. And that's supposed to be the security over a multi-year Pro Bowler and seasoned veteran in Dwayne Brown. But you're supposed to feel more comfortable about the rookie. I don't know about that. And the theme of this draft class, to drive this point home, after it's done, after I've looked at all these players, I've seen the positions they've gone after, I know the roles these guys are going to fill, they drafted a lot of players in this class to help them finish games this year. They drafted closers. They got their like final closing pitchers. They got their Mariano Riveras in this draft that when they're up, when they have a lead, when they have Aaron Rodgers on their offense scoring points and their defense making it hard for the other team to do the same, now it's you're up by 7 points. You're up by 10 points. There's 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. You have a team throwing the ball. They're trying to get back into this game. Enter Will McDonald to rush off the edge. Go end the game. Go bring down the quarterback. Go finish this game out. Conversely, Joe Tippmann at center. Obviously, they had a thought of needing a center, but they brought back McGovern to where they could have just kept played him for this next season and been okay. Would have preferred to see them make a move like they did, but they didn't necessarily have to at that point. They draft Joe Tippmann, who one of his best strengths and one of the things he does better than really want anybody else in the center class outside of Olu Atimi, who was my guy from Michigan. He creates movement at the line of scrimmage. He drives people off the ball. He moves defenders out of their gaps, and he opens lanes on the inside for running backs. So when you're up 7 points, when you're up 10 points, when there's 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter and you're on offense and you need to grind the clock out, now you're not getting stopped for 1 yard on first and 10 when you run the ball. You have a guy in your center position that can move people off the line of scrimmage, that can keep the clock churning. And then you get to the last pick in the draft that hammered this home for me more than any else. Izzy Abanikanda at 143. Now you don't have to suffice your run game when Breece Hall's tired. Now you don't have to sub out and have a player that's not as effective or not as explosive or dangerous. When you have defenses that are tired of chasing around Breece Hall for 3.5 quarters, and now it's the end of the game, and you're trying to put them away, and you're trying to keep your run game effective, in comes Abanikanda, who runs legitimately on tape. I think he's sub 4.33. I don't give a dang what his pro day numbers are, because on tape, the dude is a blur. And I guarantee anybody who listens, and I've said this before, I'll say it again, he beats Breece Hall in a race 10 out of 10 times. He's faster than Breece Hall. There's not even a doubt in my mind that Abanikanda is faster than Breece Hall. So when you have a guy with that level of speed, when you've been chasing around Breece for that long in the game, and now you're trying to keep your run game effective and put teams away, you don't got to hand the ball to a tired Breece. You give it to Izzy, and he continues to make magic, put teams in the dirt, and get out of games with wins. How many leads did we watch them blow last year? Yeah,
A lot.
And that was a rare occurrence. Normally, the Jets don't have leads to start with, and they can't blow a lead they never had. We saw them get up early in games and not be able to finish and close. This draft was about changing that, and I'm really excited to see how it plays out.
Andrew,
this is. Oh, so go ahead, Chris.
Well, what do you think, really quick, before we start talking about these guys? What do you think of? I don't know. There was some story out there that the Jets were really interested in Jahmyr Gibbs, and if he fell to 15, we would have took him there. What do you think of that?
It sounds crazy, and I don't want to say that I believe it, but I'm not going to 100% sit here and tell you that it's false. Because I think if you view this, and this is kind of how I've seen this argument made from a handful of people, and as someone that watched Jahmyr Gibbs in person when I was at Tennessee, Alabama earlier in this season, and I saw his speed and his agility in up close and in person, and it is legit. He moves. His ability to make cuts at full speed is some of the best I've ever seen, point blank, period.
Yeah.
If he's an offensive weapon, someone similar to like a Percy Harvin, instead of calling him just a running back, do you take Percy Harvin at 12 or 15? Or, you know, what if you list him as a different position? I feel like there's a different argument there. And I think for the Jets, that's what he would have been. I think he would have spent 40% of his snaps in the slot, let alone in the backfield. And you would have had another dynamic, explosive receiving talent to go along with Breece Hall and run defenses all over the yard. So it's, I don't want to say it's for sure. I don't want to say it's real, and I believe it, and I'm wholeheartedly here. It doesn't make sense to me because I feel like knowing the Jets and knowing that they already had Breece Hall and they already had Garrett Wilson, they needed the Robins to the Batmans. They didn't need another guy to take the bulk share of offensive touches. So that's where I'm kind of iffy on it. But I'm not going to sit here and say it's not true because it makes sense when you think about it. And I think if you view it from the angle of Jahmyr Gibbs, the offensive weapon, not Jahmyr Gibbs, the running back, it makes even more sense.
Yeah.
And you make a lot of sense because I think I saw somewhere that Gibbs had the best receiving or second best receiving numbers by a running back.
He led Bama in receiving as a running back.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's crazy. But yeah, I saw his numbers somewhere, and his numbers kept coming up really like the top five in receiving running back wise. Last year, I think that's what I saw.
Yeah, he's a legit pass.
But yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry about that, but yeah, it doesn't make sense. But I to tell you the truth, I did not see any of that. It's pretty interesting though. But when you make the point about closures, it kind of shines a light on Will McDonald IV, because I think Chris and I we were texting back and forth. I will say that I hadn't watched too much of Chris of McDonald at all. But Greg Cosell is somebody that if there's anybody yes. that I really trust that says anything about any prospect, that Greg Cosell is one of those people. And Greg Cosell's take on Will McDonald was like the eye opener. I think it was the day after I saw him say something about Will McDonald is the best pure pass rusher in this draft. And that sold it. That was it for me. I didn't need anything else after that. What did you feel about the pick initially and after doing your homework? I know you kind of explained your take on it already, but just give us a little in-depth look at how he fit and in the scheme. And what did you initially feel about him when he was drafted?
Yeah, first and foremost, just surprise. I don't think there was anybody in the world that had Will McDonald in the first round of the Jets in any mock draft you looked at anywhere. So there was definitely, you know, that surprise element to it. I really didn't expect them to take an edge rusher high. I thought they had, you know, plenty of edge rusher depth already. And, you know, I'm excited for the emergence of Jermaine in year two. I don't think this pick, quite honestly, says anything about Jermaine for anybody worried about that. I don't think that's how the Jets operate. I think Robert Saleh is a crazy person and he wants as many crazy people on his defensive line as he can. And they want an abundance of pass rushers. They want too many pass rushers. They don't want to just be, they're never good enough. They're never satisfied. They can always have more. They can always be better. That's how this defense wins. It wins through the defensive line. So I get it from that angle. Once the surprise wore off and I started really evaluating the player and really evaluating the fit, and again, viewing the rest of their draft class and understanding why these guys were taken and what they're going to do early and what their roles are, it made a lot of sense for me. Because in a true, realistic, honest view, this team without the green colored glasses look, the Jets had one truly threatening edge rusher on their roster last year, and it was Bryce Huff.
True.
Everybody else was as a pass rusher, just average. Jermaine showed plenty of flashes, and I am very excited for his future. I'm not trying to sleep on him whatsoever. I think he is going to be a heck of a lot better in year two than maybe people are going to realize. But when it was the end of the game, when they had the lead, when they needed to close out, who won them the game? Bryce Huff. Bryce Huff basically won them the Bills game. At the end of week 9, when they were at home against Buffalo, and they beat the Bills.
Yeah.
Bryce Huff ended that game by sacking Josh Allen at the end of the game and taking them. I'm pretty sure it was on the first play of their last drive, and they went from 1st and 10 to like 2nd and 22. The drive was over right there. That is
and
the
almost eliminated and almost taking out the quarterback too in the process.
Right, absolutely. That's the type of guy McDonald is. And for McDonald in particular, it really is amazing that he has the numbers that he has, where he's the all-time sack leader in Iowa State history by a good margin. I believe he's got like a 10-sack lead on the next closest guy at Iowa State throughout career sack lists. Had back-to-back years of at least 10 sacks in the middle of the season. Had his last season in the senior season, he got 7 sacks. I believe he had 11 or 12 tackles for loss to go with it. Over 30 sacks for his career. And he basically was playing defensive tackle. And that's the thing that's so impressive to me, is that he is playing 4-eye and 5 technique. And for people listening that don't understand exactly what that is in terms of alignment for a defensive lineman, traditional edge rushers, they are outside of offensive tackles. They are not directly head up over them. They have a bit of an edge to the outside, give them a wider corner, give them a longer runway to get around and try and bend that corner and get to the quarterback. McDonald was playing directly head up over offensive tackles at a 5 technique or slightly inside of them as a 4-eye technique. And when you are a defensive end and you are a speed first pass rusher who wins with your burst, who wins with your bend and your flexibility and your length to create separation and keep guys out of your chest, the less room you have to work with, the harder it is to be effective. And McDonald did it anyway. It was like, I'm going to get a handful of sacks as a 5 technique just off pure ability and want to, and the fact that I can be so flexible and moldable and contort my body to get through and get sacks. And then you're going to put me out on the edge a couple of times a game, and it's like 75% of the time I'm bringing the quarterback down. With the Jets, that's all he's going to do, is just get out on the edge, get in a wide 9, use his speed, use his flexibility, use his ability to bend, use his inside spin as a counter, which is also dangerous, and just go whip the crap out of offensive tackles on 3rd down. It's, you're 239 pounds. We're not sure how you're going to be able to play the run. Okay, doesn't matter. You're only coming in on 3rd and 5 or longer. And all you're going to do is just go get the quarterback. And that's going to be your entire job. And he's going to be great at it. I'm really excited to see him. The one thing with Will McDonald that I don't hear enough people mention that really jumped off the screen to me with him, and is a trait that I don't see in a lot of defensive ends, but it's really unique to him in a lot of ways. And the only way I can describe it, quite honestly, is contact balance, where if you think of a running back, when they have the ball and they're carrying and their ability to make contact with defenders, run into their, backs of their line, break off an arm tackle, take a hit and stay upright and stay balanced and stay in control. McDonald does that as a pass rusher, where he can be rushing. If he's starting on an outside, he goes to the outside gets countered, so he tries to convert to an inside move. I don't remember the team I saw this, but this is the exact rep I saw from him where I was like, oh my God, I can't believe he just did that. He starts to go convert to an inside move. He gets his inside arm up into the inside shoulder of the offensive tackle. As this happens, it's a 3-man rush. He's on the head up over the left tackle. The left guard has no one to block. He's trying to help double team the center, sees that the center's got his guy locked up. Now he's turning and looking for work and going towards the left tackle, and he sees McDonald trying to pull this inside move, and you think, okay, McDonald's about to get knocked on his butt. Here comes this guard. He's not even, McDonald's not even looking at him. He's trying to pull this inside move. He's putting his force forward to try and run through this tackle. This guard's going to come over out of nowhere and blindside him and knock him out. And McDonald just takes the shot to his ribs and bounces off and blows through both of them and gets a sack. Like a 300-pound guard hits him with a four-step head start, and he barely moved, and he's 240 pounds. And that ability to continue rushing and take on blockers and take on contact and stay balanced and stay upright and still go was overworldly impressive to me. I cannot underline, highlight this enough. Double teaming this guy is not going to work, because once you get another body on him, he just bends and twists and torts and puts his arm on the ground to keep himself balanced and dips under it and gets through anyway. And you can't slow him down with help. Chips don't even matter. Running backs try and chip him. It's laughable. He just bounces off him. It doesn't affect him. And then I saw a little bit later on, after a week or so after he got drafted, we were doing interviews and people were finding out more about this guy. He's like a trained jiu-jitsu master.
Yeah.
And he's been doing jiu-jitsu for years and years and years. And I went, oh, there it is. That explains it. Okay.
That makes sense.
There you go. There's the balance. There's the karate moves that I see. Okay, got it. That makes complete and total sense. He's a jiu-jitsu master too. Perfect. He's gonna be really, really, really good. And I am very excited for him.
Yeah, Andrew, just to drive home what you just said, again, going back to Greg Cosell. Greg Cosell's explanation for what you just said was basically the reason why he thought so highly of him, was the fact that there was two reasons, actually, was what you just said, basically having contact balance through getting hit, and also being able to basically go do a 90 degree angle around the tackles. Basically, if he put his foot in the ground, he you could not push him up the arc. He would basically go straight up the arc, like he was going so wide that you're like, why in the hell is he going?
He bends corners like a Ducati. It's ridiculous.
Yep. Yeah. It doesn't make any kind of sense that a guy could go from going straight out so far out and then bend back in almost like a 90 degree angle. And no matter how much force the tackle would hit him with or try to move him with, his body would literally just kind of just move, band around. I think I when we on our first episode after the draft, I think I stole it from somebody, but I heard somebody call him Gumby when he's a Russian.
Yeah.
Basically, kind of what it is. Yeah, his body just contorts in ways that is just makes it even more prolific that his job will be centered around just rushing the passer, and it works out so perfectly in my opinion. And if this guy could stay healthy and learn from a pro coach and become even better, those skills being used could be incredibly potent, man, especially playing with an offense that could get a lead. Bryce Huff on one side, man, come on.
Yep, you put Huff on one side, you put McDonald on the other, you put Quinnen as a shade one tech, and you put Michael Clemens or Jermaine Johnson head up over a guard, and you say, pick your poison.
Oof.
We got problems. I think there was someone, some pundit that said I don't know who it was, but it basically was, it was Daniel Jeremiah put on Twitter. That he was trying to, which D line ranked first, and everybody was picking the Niners, the Eagles, and Daniel Jeremiah basically came out and said after the fact, "I think you guys are sleeping on the Jets. You guys are sleeping on the Jets D line." It's like, you know what's gonna happen, and he said this. He's like, you know what's gonna happen when you see the Jets play that D line play, then you're gonna be like, oh, that guy's there. Oh, that's what they were talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah. But
So all right. Go ahead, Chris. Yeah. No. So all right. So with McDonald's, great pick. What do you think of round two with Tippmann? Is there any shot he doesn't start at center for us week one?
I don't like dealing in absolutes. It's old Star Wars quote says only a Sith deals in absolutes. So I'm not going to sit here and say there's no chance whatsoever that he isn't a rookie starter, but I think it's a pretty good bet that he is going to be the starting center as a rookie. And I love it. I love it. This dude, he was not my top ranked center. I will be very upfront about that. Of the four guys that I had in my top four, he was the fourth on my board. That said, I grade players in a vacuum. I grade them universally. I don't take scheme into account when I'm doing my grades because I can't be drafting for every single team, and I don't want any Jets bias influencing my overall grades and how I view prospects. So I view them completely with scheme taken out of the equation. If you factor the Jets scheme into it, Joe Tippmann becomes the number one center for them. With his mobility, with his ability to be agile and elusive and to get out in space and pull, the fact that the guy is 6'6" and well over 313 pounds and moves effortlessly. He didn't get many testing numbers. I think he was injured throughout the process, so we don't have official numbers on him, but I guarantee if he went to the combine, he would have blew it the hell up. He would have absolutely dominated any of the testing drills. And I know how RAS works after years and years of doing this to know where RAS kind of boosts players and not. RAS, for as great of a metric as it is, and I love it and I respect it to the nth degree, and I will die on the hill that that metric matters. The one thing I can say that's a bit of a downfall is that it overinflates size in the rankings. Guys that are big and fast, or guys that are really big and somewhat fast, usually have a higher RAS than guys that are small and really fast. Just how that, you know, size reflects affects into the equation. Tippmann being 6'6" and well over 300 pounds as a center with his mobility, I would have been very surprised if he did not come close to a 10 RAS. I would be very surprised.
Wow.
If he would have been nine at least a flat nine, likely higher because of how RAS inflates size. A 6'6" center is, if they can move at all, is naturally going to be very high, and he is a very good mover, let alone just can he move at all. So for the Jet scheme, with their zone blocking, with their wanting their centers to get out in front, to seal off on interior linemen on three techniques on reach blocks, to get up to linebackers, I think that's really important. And for the Packers in particular, when Hackett and Rodgers were there, they didn't just run zone runs. They ran everything under the sun. And they also ran a lot more pin and pull and raw straight up power than people realize. Tippmann is going to be excellent on pin and pull. When you're going to have a pin and pull concept, if Becton ends up being the right tackle, you could have a pin and pull concept to the right where Becton's job is down block a defensive end, and you're going to have AVT and Joe Tippmann pulling to the front side with Breece Hall in the backfield. Sign me up. Goodbye, linebackers. You're not blocking that. I really, really like Joe Tippmann. I think he's going to be our starting center this year and for a handful of years to come. I love this pick in a vacuum. The four centers I had like top, I'm pretty sure all four of them made my top 40. So I loved all of them. They were all solid players. It's not like just because I personally had Tippmann four, it means that, oh, I would have preferred them get somebody else. I had Oluwatimi as my top center. I love him to death. He is going to be a great player in this league. I am very jealous the Seahawks stole him when they did. But if the question was, who should the Jets take, and it's Oluwatimi or Joe Tippmann, I would have said Joe Tippmann.
Okay.
Yeah, we gotta at some point talk about the fact that the Seahawks, draft class, sheesh. I'm this is the first time the Jets are picking a center at so high since the great, you know,
Nick Mangold.
Yep. Another Big Ten center who wore red and white in college. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's crazy, right? So again, bringing home the fact that your point off the bat when you started talking about this draft was what you thought was the mentality of the Jets, that they were basically bringing in players to finish what they could not finish the year before. And and we spoke about the Will McDonald pick, and your explanation of what Joe Tippmann would mean for this offense is kind of basically the same thing. Can you do a little bit of a kind of a comparison between what McGovern was in this offense and what do you think Tippmann's pluses would be for the Jets?
First and foremost, this isn't a hard question for me at all, because the one thing that Tippmann has that he was one of the best, if not the best in the class at, is his power to go along with his mobility and his like ability to move. He's 6 foot six. He's well over 300 pounds and he plays like it. And we saw a lot of opportunities with McGovern where, especially in the pass game, where he just got walked back and the integrity of the front of the pocket got collapsed and whoever was a quarterback had no room to step up or move or evade anybody because they were having a center pushed into their face. That isn't going to happen nearly as much with Tippmann because his ability to anchor and his ability to hold his ground is so much better. And also, like I was talking about to start, you're going to have a better run game when you need to churn out tough yards. When it's first and 10 and you're trying to keep a drive alive and you're trying to do how many times we've seen over the last handful of years, it's first and 10, the Jets run inside, they get no push from their offensive line at all, and they gain 1 yard and it's second and nine, the drive's over. That isn't going to happen nearly as much because you're going to have a guy like Tippmann up front creating that space. And even if it's 2 or 3 yards before the running back gets touched, and the second they do, they get tackled, that's 2 or 3 free yards extra that you didn't have before. And when you're trying to grind out a game, that matters. When you're on the goal line, when you're trying to beat the Minnesota Vikings and you have 4 chances to get in on the goal line and you can't do it, you don't have to throw the ball because you don't have to be scared that your offensive line can get you 1 yard. That we couldn't, there was no point in last season where we could trust the Jets offensive line in the run game to just get 1 yard for their running backs. Get 1 yard free. Give them 1 yard of space. It's 3rd and 1. We need a first down. It's 4th and 1 on the goal line. We need a touchdown. Get 1 yard of space for your running backs. Couldn't happen. That's why you draft Joe Tippmann, to make sure that happens.
Yeah, that definitely was an incredible difficulty for that offense last year. I agree. Again, like I keep saying over and over again, to me, that was such a beautiful way you kind of tied that together. But from pick to pick, you kind of just seen what the Jets' vision was for this team. Round 4, next pick was, since the Jets kind of moved down a couple spot a couple times with the New England Patriots, and they picked Carter Warren out of Pitt. What did you see looking at Warren?
Yeah, I like Warren a lot. He was a 3+ year starter. He got injured in his 4th season starting early. I think he only played 3 or 4 games for Pittsburgh before he had an Achilles injury that ended his season there. But from all indications, he seems to be fully healthy and recovered. He's expected to be in training camp. I expect him to be on the active roster. I don't think he's going to be, you know, an injury case where they're nursing him along. Played a ton of left tackle at Pittsburgh. And I think ultimately that's where his home is going to fit, is going to be as a left tackle in a ideal, perfect scenario world. This is the guy you start letting Warren under Dwayne Brown right now so he can take over next year as your starting left tackle. And you give him, it fits the Jets mold. The one thing we saw over and over with the Jets in this draft class in particular, they didn't draft a single player with an RAS lower than 9. They wanted
athleticism,
right? Yeah. They wanted talent and they wanted natural athleticism, and Carter Warren absolutely has it. He's got a good frame. He's like 6'5", I believe. He's about 311 pounds, has 35-inch arms. So he's got plenty of length to keep people at bay. Very, very advanced pass blocker. Very developed as a pass blocker. Uses his hands very well. Knows how to independently use his hands, which is important. You really don't want to see guys trying to strike as a tackle. You don't want to see them strike with both hands at once. That's a big no-no for me, because it's very easy to then swat both of those hands down, and it locks your hips. Not only that, it locks your hips. It leaves you off balance. It leaves you over your toes. And you get a defensive end that just uses a double swipe move and put your hands in the dirt. Now you're screwed and you can't recover. You can't get both of your hands up that fast. So very good with his independent hands. I like that. He's got good, quick feet. Also important for offensive tackles and pass blocking. You got to have quick feet. You got to be able to keep up to the corner. He does a good job there. I'd like to see him get a little better with his anchor. I'd like to see him get a little better at holding his ground and absorbing power. I'd like to see him be a little better at creating movement in the run game, kind of like the opposite of Joe Tippmann, where Joe Tippmann, you need him to move a defensive tackle a yard up a gap, and he's going to do it, and he's not going to have any questions about it. Good to go. Let's do it next play. Carter Warren's going to be the guy where he's going to get in the way. He's going to, you know, latch on. He's going to prevent his guy from completely shedding him and making a tackle, but he's not much of a drive blocker. He's not much of a finisher. I'd like to see him develop a little bit more of that to his game. But on the positive, he played in a similar offense to the Jets. Pitt runs a ton of zone concepts. Under Narduzzi, it's pretty pro style. So it's not like there he's coming from this crazy different, you know, college offense that didn't give him any true pass sets or any run looks that seem similar. Very good on reach blocks, getting out in front, sealing people, again, getting in the way type of blocking. I'm just going to prevent you from making the tackle. I'm not going to put you in the dirt, but you're not going to make a play either. That's where Carter Warren really shines. I want to see him develop more. I like that pick. I'm excited for it. For the tackles that were available at that spot, if DeJuan Jones's off-field concerns, and I'm putting that in air quotes, were as bad as apparently they were, then I understand it. But given that, assuming that is the case and that DeJuan Jones isn't going to be the steal of this draft like I think he will be, then Carter Warren was probably the best guy they could have took.
Yeah. Well, the one thing you said that worries me is the whole anchor thing. Is that a thing that you could develop over time? That
yes and no.
Being able to.
Yeah, it's a bit okay. It's a bit of both. There is a little bit of just natural strength that you want to develop. You want it, and it's not just a weight room. You know, there is just something to being naturally strong and being able to absorb power. There is a bit of technique to it. The one thing that I saw with him that really made this point with his anchor stick out to me, he plays a bit too upright. I'd like to see him keep his pad level a little bit lower. And on top of that, I'd like to see him keep his base a little bit more behind him, where you don't want to be too far out over your toes. But if you've ever seen or heard offensive linemen talk about offensive tackle play, when you're going in your kick set, you want to almost be sitting in the chair as a term that they talk about. And that's when you're getting your knees low, you're bent, you're getting your butt low, you're getting ready to absorb power. And then what you can do from there is, assuming you're a left tackle in this scenario, you can kick out your outside leg behind you. That can be your plant foot. You can keep your inside leg in front, and that can be your drive foot. And you can have that other leg to kind of act as a kickstand to help you absorb power. When you're so far upright, it's harder to get in that position. And I feel like that's where pad level will help with that. Technique will help with that. Obviously, get in the weight room, try and get a bit stronger. That's going to, you know, go when it comes to his run blocking as well. It's not so much a mentality thing. It's not like I'm seeing him be softer, or I'm not seeing a lack of effort. So where that's where it's a yes and no thing, because for some guys, it's just effort. And it's just all they have to do is just have the want to, and they have the strength internally to do it. I don't know if Warren quite has that, but even if he's not going to be the absolute end all be all type of strength offensive tackle, that's okay, because he's got quick feet, he's got good length, and he knows that guys are likely going to try him with power as a result, so he can be more braced and ready for that when it comes.
And you know what? The one thing I've noticed, at least this year, compared to last offseason, and I'm sure you mentioned it on your podcast, because we did, we had no depth at all on the offensive line, right? Yep. And then we said it, like, if injuries hit this team, we're going to be in trouble. And of course, that's what happened. But this year, I think that's a totally different story. I see good depth now behind this offensive line. Am I right?
No, they've done a really good job of it, and a sneaky good job, quite honestly, because you're still figuring out your starting tackles. I don't think, from Robert Saleh saying, you know, Mekhi Becton, go win left tackle, I think Becton's going to have to be so amazing at left tackle that they have no choice but to play him there. Otherwise, he's going to play on the right side. I just don't see them moving Dwayne Brown at 39 years old coming off an injury and say, you've played left tackle every snap of your career, go play on the right side. I don't see that being the case. So if Dwayne Brown, with the money he's making, is going to start, which I think he will, I think it will be at left tackle. You have Becton on the right side. You now have Max Mitchell, who's got some playing experience, that's a swing tackle who played on both sides in college, who can go either way. You have Carter Warren, who is going to be getting back healthy. He's going to be studying under Dwayne Brown, can be Brown's immediate backup left tackle as a rookie if he needed to. You have some depth there. They did a really good job. Schweizer, I think, is a major upgrade over Feeney. When you're looking at a guy that can be your backup center or your backup guard, you have that opportunity. McGovern might not be a starter, and he would be a starter on a handful of teams still. You know, market withstanding, I think we saw the center market collapse, and McGovern had his sights set on a deal much higher than he was going to get, but he probably could have been picked up to be a starter for some teams. At the very least, he's one of the best backup centers you're going to find in the league. He could maybe slide in at guard if you absolutely need him to, has the body and the skill set to fit in that role. Their depth is a heck of a lot better than it was last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. it's good. It's good when you have a good GM, right? That's a good thing.
It sure is.
Round five, man. Carter Warren's a teammate out of Pitt, Israel Vanaconda, is from the neighborhood. Chris from Brooklyn. Brooklyn's in the house. Yeah. I watched the film too, man. You kind of spoke about him. Yeah, I will wholeheartedly agree with you that this guy is faster than because he moves so easily. It doesn't make any sense that when they said that he ran a 4.45 or 4.
Yeah, 4.45 on his pro day. He didn't run at the combine. He ran at his pro day. The official scout time was 4.45. There are some scouts that had him as low as 4.29. So I don't see how you go from that far of a distance of 4.45 on a stopwatch to 4.29. I don't know. All I know is what my eyes see and on tape. This guy is legit low 4.3. And if you told me he ran 4.29, I'd believe it more than I'd believe he ran 4.45.
That doesn't, yeah, because when I saw the time, I said that really doesn't match up with what I saw, because I can't remember which linebacker I was watching, and they said he ran for like mid 4.4s, and I was like, yeah, that kind of matches up. And then you're telling me Easy was running the same? No, it does not match at all. He looks incredibly explosive, and a lot of the times when he was running, he would be surrounded by guys, and it would be instantly he would separate from them. It was almost like they were like, oh, he's right here, and then he's not. He's like, he's gone. And very interesting pick. I think, again, another incredibly forward-thinking pick by the Jets GM, man. Tell us what you saw from this guy. And also, I think, because there's some people keep saying that this kid has contact balance issues. Did you see that too?
Yeah, I got to try it. I gotta try and keep this one short, guys. This is my favorite pick of their draft, and it's not even close. Love this guy, and I love him for this offense. And yes, I can sit here and admit his contact balance isn't the greatest. For being 216 pounds, you'd like to see him be able to take on contact a little more. But here's the thing. You gotta touch him first. And that is not easy. That is really a tough task. It is a lot harder to just get hands on Izzy Abanaconda than it is, you know, let alone worrying about anything past that. This dude is a missile. This dude is a rocket. When he puts his foot in the ground and gets north and south and opens up and explodes, there's nobody that comes close to touching him. Like you're talking about Sharman, he'll take an outside zone run and he'll be in the mix of the trash in the box with linebackers and defensive ends and all around him. And he gets that inside lane and that outside foot hits in the ground and he starts going dead up the field and he leaves everybody like they're standing still. It's the camera struggles to follow him. He's so fast sometimes where it's they can't even move the camera quick enough. He's already exploded upfield. And then by the time he's in the end zone, guys are still at the 35. That sort of speed is rare in a running back. And you don't need to have that sort of speed to be a good running back. I'll be the first person to say that if I'm building a running back in a lab and I'm looking for what I want in a player, I want the guy who runs 4.6, but runs 4.6 every single play, gets to that 4.6 in a flash, makes people miss, can run through tackles and do all of that. That's the sort of guy that I would pick if I was going, you know, this is my ideal guy. Like I was talking about with Tippmann, that's me. That's not the Jets. That's not what their scheme does. That's not how their offense is built. For what they want in their offense, like we saw when Breece Hall got into this game, it is about speed and explosion and being able to take those creases and make the most out of them. I can't wait to watch this guy. I absolutely can't wait to watch this guy. I don't want to be the bad guy here, but Michael Carter, your days are numbered. I'm sorry. And I love MC. He's a great person. I want him to succeed. I would want nothing more than for him to be with the Jets for his entire career and be an awesome player. He doesn't sniff a Abanaconda. I'm sorry. They're different levels of athletes. Wow. They're different skill sets. There's for as good as Carter can be, he's never going to have that explosion. He's never going to have that speed. He's never going to have that burst. And the Jets want guys that when you block them, when you give them 3 yards, they take 40. When you give them an inch, they take a mile. When you give them the slightest bit of a crease, that's all it takes for them to take off and make a big play out of it. And that is a Bonaconda to an absolute T. I love him. I cannot wait to watch him. He is the Jets running back two right now, and he will be for the entirety of his time. He and Breece Hall are together. They are a perfect 1-2 duo in that the Jets offense and their backfield is always going to be explosive. It's always going to be dangerous. They are going to not. And this is another point that I think is really crucial that a lot of people are missing. The Jets couldn't call the same plays for Carter and for Bam Knight and for James Robinson that they could for Breece Hall. They didn't have the speed. They didn't have the explosion. If everyone remembers, and I'm sure any Jets fan does, we all remember Breece's long touchdown in Denver, right?
Yep. I was there.
Yeah, we do.
Strong zone toss to the outside. Michael Carter isn't scoring 60-yard touchdowns on that play. Bam Knight, as good as he looked, isn't scoring a 60-plus-yard touchdown on that play. Breece's ability to get to the outside, get his foot in the ground, spot the lane, and get right up the sideline and leave every defender in the dirt behind him. He's the only guy on their roster that could do that. Now they have two. Now when Breece is tired, now when he needs a breather, now when you're not trying to overwork this guy, you have another guy in a Bonaconda who is not even just as fast, faster. You have another guy in a Bonaconda who's not just as explosive, more explosive in a straight line. And if you give him that bit of a crease, he's going to take it 62. This was the last part of their offense they needed. I think their receiver room is okay. They're keeping Corey Davis. I'm fine with that. I think Garrett gives them speed. I think they're going to use Mecole a lot more than people are expecting. I think he can find a role in a sort of schemed up scenario. I like the idea of Lazard and Corey on the outside doing the big body work. Aaron Rodgers loves throwing back shoulder fades. I think they're going to be good for that. The offensive line had its pieces. We got the new center. We brought back McGovern as depth. We've added depth like we've talked about. I think the tight end group is solid. They needed another running back that wasn't Breece Hall. And we saw how bad their offense got when Breece Hall wasn't their running back anymore. And I think this pick just, that's the last T that you got to cross off for me, where now even when Breece Hall isn't in the game, the Jets still have a guy in their backfield that can take it 80, and that is something defenses have to worry about.
So do you think they're going to move on from Michael Carter? You think they're going to trade him this offseason or no?
No, I don't. I'm not going to say that, but I think that he is running back three from now until some other reason or thing happens that says he isn't.
Right.
I think he's mainly going to be a pass protection guy. I think he's going to be a spell as a receiver. They're going to get him. He's going to get his touches. He's going to get some plays. Not like he's never going to see the field again, but for what the Jets want their offense to be. And now that they have Breece Hall and they saw how important having a guy like that was, they're not going to want to go a completely different direction. And I don't know what happened to Michael Carter, but he spent the entirety of the offseason before the 2022 season saying, I want to get 1 yard faster. I want to get more explosive. I got caught from behind twice and it kept me up at night and he got slower. And I don't know how that happened. That he got slower, he got less explosive. He looked like he was running in quicksand for a lot of the year, and that's just that doesn't work in this style of offense, and that's not what the Jets need.
Interesting.
Yeah, really interesting, man. As always, again, always dropping the gems. next pick, 170, Zaire Barnes. A lot I heard about him. But it kind of fits the mold, the Robert Saleh mold of running of linebackers lately, right?
Yeah. This is the guy I've seen of all their draft picks. This is the guy I've seen the least of. So I don't want to spend too much time on him because I haven't gotten too much into him yet. And I didn't really watch him much at all before the draft. I did like 12 linebackers this year. He wasn't one of them. But like you were saying, Charmin, absolutely fits the Robert Saleh mold. 6'3", 230 pounds, or 6'1", I believe, 230 pounds, mid 4.5 speed, shows up on tape, looks that way, looks to be legit. Hard hitter, will throw his weight into a tackle, has no shame about that. And the little bit of him that I have seen, the one thing that I've really, really liked is he's got really fluid hips in coverage. Whether it's man or zone, his ability to shuffle and change and flip his hips around and break on passes was really, really impressive for a bigger linebacker. And I think that's part of what attracted him to the Jets and what they like in their linebackers. just for right now, he's going to be a good depth piece, going to play on special teams most likely. Again, I got to get more into his actual film and tape before I can sit there and say these are my wholehearted thoughts on the player. But they needed some linebacker depth. They got some linebacker depth. He fits their mold. And there is, if there's one position that I trust this staff to coach, it's linebacker. The experience that Sala and Ulbrich have and the guys that they've put in the league and they've tutored and coached while they were in the league, their record speaks for itself. So if this is a guy they were excited for, then I'm going to be excited as well.
I like it. So we'll wait until, you know, you do more homework on this guy. We know you're definitely going to give us the 411. Sixth round. I know that's a guy you really wanted to talk about, and Jarek Bernard Converse. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, JBC. This is Izzy was my favorite pick. This is the most interesting one. This is the one where I'm like keeping a bookmark in that I really want to see how he progresses, because I spent a lot of time not only on your show, guys, but on other shows, my own and other ones that I went on, talking about what type of safety the Jets needed. Obviously, they had a need at free safety. They didn't really seem to go out of their way to fill that need with any marquee additions. Seems like Tony Adams, former undrafted free agent from last year who made the 53-man roster, has a pretty good inside track on that starting job. All indications are the Jets staff loves him and they have high hopes for him. So right now, it seems like he's the de facto starting free safety. But that job, for all intents and purposes, is wide open. And there could be anybody that could come out of the woodshed and take that role for themselves. What I spent talking about for so long was that what they needed in a safety was somebody that not only could be a safety, but could play man-to-man coverage on third down on wide receivers when the Jets blitz and they play the cover one or they play cover zero and you get a slot receiver in a 3-by-1 set and you got the inside slot receiver and you're the free safety now and it's cover zero and both those linebackers are blitzing and you're in one-on-one coverage with this slot receiver from a 9-yard depth and you got to cover him with a two-way go and not give this quarterback a free answer on this blitzing down. That is a very, very tough ask. That is not easy. And I think it's important to recognize that the Jets put their safeties in some ridiculously tough situations, harder than a lot of other teams do. And so it takes a special and certain type of player to be able to fill that need. And you look at a guy like Bernard Converse, he played at 3 years at Oklahoma State before going back home to Louisiana, playing his fourth year in college at LSU. His first 2 years at Oklahoma State, he plays corner. His last year, he plays safety. He goes to LSU, spends the first half of the season playing corner, the next half of the season playing safety. In high school, he plays his first 2 years of varsity at corner, switches for his last year, and plays safety again. So at every single stop in this guy's career, he's split back and forth between cornerback and safety. And I watched an interview with him before the draft. I think it was with Jake Asman, a great guy. Would love to get a chance to speak with him in the future. Was doing an interview with him where he's talking about, as a defensive back, you know, you're so versatile. What, how do you feel? Do you feel like that versatility helps you? And Bernard Converse says this answer, which I absolutely adored. And it was, I'm a DB. I think every DB should be able to play both. If you can play safety, you should be able to cover like a corner. Like, I don't see what the problem is. You're a DB, you're a DB. It shouldn't matter. And I'm thinking in my head, that's the Jets mentality. That's the guys they want. The I'll do whatever it takes for the team and doesn't matter if it's expected of me. I'm good enough to do it. Fine, let's do it. It's not a big deal. We don't need to make it a big deal. That's just what I do. That really stuck out to me. And then I got to this guy's film. He's an incredible athlete. 6 foot tall, 200 pounds, ran a 4.39, had a plus 40 inch vertical. Explosive as all get out. His ability to plant and drive is absolutely there. Has experience playing off coverage as a corner, has experience playing press coverage, has played zone schemes, has played band schemes, played in the slot, played both safety positions, and he never looks uncomfortable. He never looks like anything is too much for him. And the one thing that I feel like limited him from being a bigger name is ball production. He didn't have too many pass deflections, wasn't the greatest at jumping passes and grading interceptions, but when you just need a guy, here's the play, execute it correctly, do your job and fulfill your role. He was very sound. He always was, you know, wasn't out of position, wasn't getting caught looking in the wrong spot. Very aware of the players around him, secure tackler as well. I am really, really interested to see what this guy can do, because I think he is like tailor made to be a Jets free safety. where you know he can play corner because he did it for multiple years at multiple different schools in top divisions of college football in the Big 12 and the SEC, and you know he can play safety for the exact same reasons. And then you hear his attitude and his mindset, and you see that that's not overwhelming for him, that he's perfectly comfortable with it, and it's not anything new, and he's a great athlete to go along with it. I really like this fit. I'm really intrigued by this player. I'm not going to say, again, the free safety position is wide open. I'm not going to say he's going to win it as a rookie, but I think there is a chance, and I think he will be competing to be the starting free safety as a rookie. We'll see what happens in camp, but I'm going to follow this guy for a while because I think he's got a really bright future with this team.
Interesting.
Now, I think the craziest thing about Chris, every last pick we talk about, there's all these variables that are basically tied directly to what the Jets do. Everything. The first round pick, we were talking about Will McDonald, talking about his bend, his speed, and all these things about him that basically tie him directly to what the Jets want to do. And every last player we've talked about, again, talking about a GM and a staff that has gone out and known exactly what they wanted, and even if the player wasn't a big name, have basically tied almost everything that player is directly to what they want and need in their system. Is incredible for me. As a Jets fan that has been watching this team flail around for years, it's incredible to have a GM and a staff that have the kind of forethought to move the way they do. I don't care what anybody tells me, right? I don't know what this draft is going to be in the future. But yes, it did not have that high impact, incredible, crazy, you know, 3 picks in the first round like last year. But when you dig into this draft, something tells me that this is going to be incredibly important. These guys are going to be incredibly important to what the Jets are going to be doing this year and moving forward.
No doubt.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I really do agree. It is a testament to Joe Douglas, first and foremost, for having the empathy and the self-awareness to say that I don't need to be making every single call, and I'm going to accept input from my coaching staff and get them players that fit what they want, not just draft guys I like. We've seen Jets GMs and coaches do that for a long time, where we saw players that they would draft and it would be, how is he going to fit in the scheme? How is this going to fit with what they do? It seems like there's a disconnect, like the front office isn't picking players that the coaching staff wants. And the coaching staff isn't always right, to be clear. It's not like just do everything the coaching staff says, but it's fine players with skill sets and with tendencies that fit what you want out of that role. And the Jets do a very, very good job of drafting players that fit what they want. They know what they want. They know the role that player is going to fill. They know exactly what spot they're going to be put in and what's going to be expected of them. And they only take guys that they know are built for those positions. And that doesn't happen without Joe Douglas having the wherewithal to stop and look inside and go, I don't have all the answers. And the best thing for this team is for it to be a collective process. So hats off to Douglas for that.
And you know what, quickly, I think every year's draft, but this year's specifically, I think has taught us and should teach everybody that every team's draft board is totally different, right? And no matter what, you know, no matter what way we might rank our draft board or another, you know, some other expert on TV says, oh, this guy's going to go first, this guy's going to go second. They know nothing what these other teams are setting up their draft boards like.
Right.
So, like you said, the Will McDonald pick came out of nowhere, right? Nobody had him going at 15 to the Jets. But you know what? The Jets had him going there because that's who was probably, and I was telling Sharman last week, right? The three things that you get that you draft for, right? You draft for need, you draft for depth, or you draft best player available. And I think Will McDonald, going back to him real quick, he fits all three of those choices for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, absolutely.
Right. Now each pick obviously is a different, you know, is a different choice, but it just proves that every team has these draft boards totally different to fit their needs. And that's what we're doing right now. And now looking at the seventh round pick, this is the guy that I don't understand. Like, he's a freak, right? I mean, a physical freak. The guy just does everything. He's amazing. And he lasts all the way to the seventh round. Number one, why did he last all the way down to the seventh round if this guy is a total freak? Well, what's going on here?
All right, guys. We've had a lot of fun tonight. This is where the fun stops, and I'm sorry to say that.
Good. Okay.
Zach Kuntz lasted until the seventh round because he's an amazing athlete, and he has absolutely no idea how to be a tight end.
There you go.
Thank you.
And I need to be very clear about this. It's a seventh round pick. It's a dart throw on athleticism. Very rarely do seventh round picks even make the roster, let alone become a valuable starting player. So with the chances being so low, this is the exact perfect time that you take a dart on athleticism and you chuck it and say, okay, this guy's got all the talent in the world. He's going to need a lot of development. Maybe it'll work out. If it doesn't, it's a seventh round pick. Oh, well, if it does, we got way more out of a seventh round pick than we should. I don't have any issues with that. I don't have any issues with the process. I don't have any issues with the thought. Again, I'm going to say it till I'm blue in the face. It's a seventh round pick.
Right.
Oh my goodness. I did not like Zach Kuntz tape. And I didn't like it before the draft, and I don't like it now, now that he's in green. I watched, I think, 11 tight ends in this class before the draft. Zach Kuntz was 11 on my list. And I'm really trying not to be that harsh because it's a seventh round pick. It's a dart throw on athleticism. But holy crap, the guy is so raw. He is so raw. His ability to move and his athleticism, 10 out of 10 RAS, all of that is real. Looks that way on tape. Moves way better than somebody that's almost 6'8", has any business moving. Soft hands when he needs to, you know, has ability to make quick cuts when he's not telegraphing a route and making it easy to know it's coming. He cuts quick. You know, there is a lot of athleticism here, and that's all very real. Outside of that, everything is just a work in progress, and everything is you're hoping for him to develop. And let's not forget the fact that it's not like he's young. He's 24 years old. He spent 2 years at Penn State, which is a tight end factory, and got beat out by everybody ahead of him, despite being a high 4-star recruit. Goes to Old Dominion, plays against lower competition where he can thrive being this incredible athlete, and puts up some good numbers as a receiving tight end where basically most of his production came on jump balls. It's not wowing me. His blocking is awful. Awful. And I mean that wholeheartedly. His blocking is horrible. I watched Dalton Kincaid and I watched Zach Kuntz back to back, because I said, these are two guys that are both supposed to be the move tight ends, the receivers, the good athletes, the good pass catchers. I knew Kincaid was towards the top of the list. I knew Kuntz was getting mentioned amongst other people. I knew he was supposed to be this great athlete. So I thought, here's these two guys. I can kind of compare them directly in my brain and get a feel for, you know, Kincaid, who's supposed to be this possible first round player, and Kuntz, who's in the mix amongst this really good tight end class. I remember texting my co-host Matt on Oklahoma Drill when I was going through their tape, and I'm going through Kincaid. Kincaid is an incredible receiver, and I'm absolutely terrified about who's going to cover him on the Jets, but that's a conversation for another day. Kincaid as a blocker. Keep in mind, Dalton Kincaid's like 6'4", 242, 45 pounds. And I'm texting Matt and I go, hey, like, watching Kincaid as a blocker, and as long as he's blocking somebody that isn't a linebacker or defensive end, he's fine. Where as long as he doesn't have to take on anybody that really is going to be used to taking on a block, you know, he's going to be okay. He can block some DBs. He can block some safeties. He can get in the way. He can be a receiver screen guy. The effort is there, but he just doesn't have the strength or the ability to be that down in, down out blocker. And then I turn on Zach Kuntz, who's 6'7" and 260 plus pounds. And Zach Kuntz was a significantly worse blocker than Dalton Kincaid.
Makes no sense.
And it blew my mind. And I couldn't believe it. And I texted Matt and I said, well, scratch everything I just said about Kincaid, because somehow Kuntz is worse. And I don't, it's not just technique with him. There's zero effort. There is zero effort. Yeah. He is so soft. He is tissue paper soft. Contact is good night. If it's not a jump ball where he can just box somebody out and keep somebody on his back and make the catch, doesn't matter. Going over them, trying to take on contact as a runner, trying to create yards after the catch, you sniff on him, he goes down. Wow. You try and take him on as a blocker and he'll run through him. He had a play against Virginia that I'm not even kidding, guys. This made me turn off the tape of watching him.
Wow. Where
he is in pass protection. It was the run game. He's playing, he's an offline tight end. So he's in a wing alignment. So he's not dead up on the line of scrimmage. He's off to the outside and then behind. And Old Dominion's running a split zone play. So they're going to take Kuntz, who's that split blocker. He's going to go against the grain, cut to the backside, and he's going to take on whatever backside defender is there. And with a running start, mind you, coming all the way across the formation at 6'7", 260 pounds, with a running start, he's trying to get on and take on this backside defender. The backside defender he's taking on is a 5'11", 200-pound safety from Virginia. 5'11", 200-pound safety going against 6'7", 260-pound Zach Kuntz with a running start, and the safety put him on his butt.
Oh, my God.
The safety was standing still. He wasn't running. He was standing still, and he just put his shoulder into Kuntz's chest and knocked Kuntz to the ground. And that was it for me. And I said, okay, I've seen enough. I don't need to see anything else after this. That's it. I'm done. Like, moving on, bring on the next tight end, because if you're telling me you're 6'7" and you're 260 pounds and safeties are putting you in the dirt, you got a long way to go. So I hope I'm wrong. Zach Kuntz, prove me wrong, become the greatest tight end of all time. I will gladly die, like, be the sacrificial lamb for that. I am rooting for this guy to succeed. I don't have any sort of personal vendetta against him. I don't care just because I didn't like the tape and now the Jets drafted him. I want to be proven right. I don't care about any of that. I want him to succeed. He seems like a good guy. Doesn't seem like there's anything wrong with him off the field or he's a bad person or anything. I hope he has a great career. But based on what I know and based off what I've seen, it is unlikely that that's going to happen. And he's not making the 53-man roster. He won't. Yeah. I would bet money on that right now that he is going to be a practice squad player, and we'll see where this goes from there. But cool your Jets, everybody, for lack of a better phrase. I know you see the RAS score, and I know everyone starts salivating that the Jets got this steal in the seventh round, but there's a reason the guy with the 10 RAS was available in the seventh round.
Right.
That's what I said, Andrew. Actually, I had to bring a personal story about this because I had a friend of mine that moved to Texas and went to college in Texas and wanted to take up football. Again, 6'6", big kid, like probably like almost what I think at the time he weighed like about 270 the same way or whatever. And he wanted to play football, went out to play football. I remember him calling me, telling me he's going to try out for football. And then the next week we were talking and he says, and I'm like, how did it go? And he's like, yeah, nah. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, football is not for me.
Yeah.
I think, like, basically the biggest dude, you would think he's a football player. And not only that, he was a really good basketball player. He had all the athleticism, could jump, all that stuff.
Yep. And so was Zach Kuntz.
He just, football was not for him. And Chris and I, when we discussed this pick, that's the first thing I said. I said, if you're not picked before the seventh round and your athleticism is through the roof, the only thing that makes sense is that you're not a football player.
No, yeah. I'm gonna be honest, guys. Knowing everything I know about the Jets and knowing everything I know about their mentality, I don't know why they drafted him. And I get it's athleticism, it's a dart throw. You know, the tight end was a sneaky need for them. Their starters are older. You know, Ruckert's still a question coming off an injury, though I could understand them drafting a tight end. We actually, on Oklahoma Drill, on our tight end episode, brought up the idea that we thought it was very possible in the mid to late rounds that they could take a tight end if one of these good tight ends in this deep class were to fall. But I don't see the fit from a mentality standpoint. I don't see how, for all gas, no brakes, Robert Saleh, for 60 minutes, for find that extra, you know, 60% when the chips are low, we're going to keep dragging those guys out to deep water and find out they can't swim guy, that this is there as their head coach. And Joe Douglas, who's the, I want, you know, dogs, I want passionate guys, I want guys who leave it all out in the field and give it all for the game. where did you get this guy from? Where did that alignment come in? It's just, it's when it's this obvious on tape, that's a bad sign to me. And I don't want to sit here and sit here and be like, oh, I don't think this is going to work out. Penn State's a tight end factory. They've put so many tight ends into the league the last handful of years. They just put another one in the draft, this very same draft, in Brenton Strange, who went in the second round. They coach tight ends. They know how to coach tight ends. He was a major, major recruit out of high school for Penn State. He was one of their biggest tight end recruits in a long, long time, and a school that's had a handful of good tight ends enter the league over the last handful of years. And he just kept falling down the depth chart. And guys just kept getting passed up over and over and over for him. And when you are this supreme level of athlete, you get 100,000 chances. So you have to then transfer. You have to go to Old Dominion. No other D1 school would take you. There wasn't anywhere else that you could have gone. You have to go to Old Dominion. It's a seventh round pick. I don't care. It's a seventh round pick. That's what I keep having to repeat myself over and over and over and over. It's a seventh round pick. It doesn't matter. It's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. It's just a seventh round pick. It means nothing. But I did not like this pick, and I still don't now.
Okay.
So go ahead, Chris.
As I say, so let's end it on a more, maybe a positive note. Any of the undrafted guys that we've heard of, are any of those guys sticking out to you that might make the team?
Yeah, we were talking before the show a little bit. The one guy I'm really interested to see is Trey Dean, the third, the safety from Florida. A guy that I didn't get to watch myself, but I watched a lot of Florida defenders. I watched like three of them. I watched three of them throughout the course of the season in different roles. And I kept noticing number zero as coming from the safety spot, coming downhill and knocking people in the face. And I don't know what it is about Florida defenders. It's like a sweet tooth for me. I can't quit them, but they're bats out of hell. And they're psychopaths in the best possible way. And they play street ball. And I love every minute of it because it's just so reckless and violent and intimidating. And I want that in a defense. I want that in a defender. And Dean has that same sort of mentality where he doesn't care how big you are. He doesn't care how big he is. He's coming downhill and he's going to put his shoulder in your chest and you're going to. It's not the size of the dog, but the size of the fight and the dog or something like that. Right. There's some old saying, I'm butchering it, but it's that sort of mentality. And I'm interested to see how he can fill in that role. They need a safety. It'll be interesting to see how he fits in.
Okay.
Hey, listen, man, we've spent a lot of time talking about, the possibilities of this draft, especially the fact that we now have a competent quarterback, and not only competent, but probably one of the best throws of the football we've seen in the last, I don't know how many years. Now, and put that on top of the fact that we've been talking about deliberately pairing players that with needs of this team. It's incredibly, I'm salivating over the possibilities of this season and the next. Thank you again, as usual, to come in coming in and talking about the draft with us, man. It's always fun having you around. Again, always dropping the gems, man. Always coming through with the knowledge and info. Looking forward to do this again. Anytime I know you're a busy man.
No, of course. You guys know I love coming on. You guys know I'll come on anytime. Anytime I can make time to come on, you know I'll be here, because I always have a blast talking to you guys. This is going to be one heck of a season. I cannot wait. We get prime time to open the year. If this can't even be competent, then we need to cut our losses and find a new team, because there's no point anymore. That's where I'm at. I'm not Super Bowl or bust. I'm not, they have to win a championship this year, or everything is terrible. But if they can't break 500 Aaron Rodgers and this roster, then I'm going to start watching the NBA, because there's not going to be a point for me to be involved anymore.
Yeah, and then the 2023 type of NBA, I'm not even a big fan of it. I'll watch it I'll get to watch it if you
write. Start watching golf at this point. Like,
forget about like, team sports.
They got underwater basket weaving on TV now or something. Like, I'll be free.
Oh my god!
Sundays at 1 will be free. I'm gonna get so many more chores done. You know, it's gonna be a whole new world. Exactly. Hopefully that doesn't happen.
No. Andrew, before we go, let everybody know where they could find you, your podcast, everything. So put that out there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, of course. You can find me on Twitter myself at AndrewGolden_17. You can also follow my show for JetX Factor Oklahoma Drill at OKD Podcast as well. Check out JetsXFactor.com. Got a bunch of stuff. Good guys over there putting out great content. You'll find all my written work and film breakdowns and stuff there as well. Yeah, that's pretty much it. You want to find, learn about some football and follow some fun Jet stuff, then join on.
Definitely. Follow that stuff.
You know, we're always for the Attack Factor. You know, Joe Blewett is actually the guy that named our show. So yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Yeah. We appreciate. But again, thank you for coming through, Andrew.
Yeah. Take it easy, no problem, guys. For sure. You guys too.
All right. Take care, guys.